You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, November 16th, 2021. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, infrastructure bill signed. We will tell you what is in and not in it. Meanwhile, House Democrats look to vote on the Build Back Better on Thursday. Seemingly because there's not as much concerns about the CBO score, at least in the House. Europe to tighten vaccination rules as the fourth wave hits. And New York City okays boosters for everybody over 18. Meanwhile, the CYA tour continues. Manchin and Pompeo supposedly contemplated the 25th Amendment after January 6th. Speaking of January 6th, Steve Bannon does a little perp walk. The question is Mark Meadows next? Religious groups attack the non-discrimination provision in the Build Back Better universal pre-K and daycare plan. Just like Jesus would. Closing arguments in the Rittenhouse case. John Deere and striking workers reached their third tentative deal. We'll see if rank and file okay it. Meanwhile, Kellogg's sues its own workers. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It is a Tuesday. And as always, Emma Viglin is here. Hello, Emma.
Hello. Happy day of twos to you.
Thank
sir.
You. Yes, yes. I appreciate that. That's, yep. It's just a matter of time before we went into the old English.
I didn't even commit there. If you really want me to commit, I'll commit.
Let's hold off on that.
Fun half?
Maybe we'll give it a little time.
Yeah. Maybe in just a bajillion years.
Committing to the old English really sort of feels like a third year thing.
All right. I'd say if it was written into my contract, then I'm only allowed to do those voices at a certain period of time. I was trying to get around that.
The good news is that in the first quarter of 2022, Emma is scheduled to come in complete Ren Faire garb, right? Is that right?
I'm not as into that part. I don't like dressing up.
Okay.
Not really for me.
Okay. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Interesting, and we're going to get to this a little bit more, but just going to get some rundowns of some news today. But they seem in the House that they're going to vote on Thursday on the Build Back Better bill. This is not going to be the final bill because it's got to go to the Senate, et cetera, et cetera. But they're not anticipating the CBO scores to come out until Friday, maybe late Thursday. But there seems to be amongst members of the House, and maybe that's just a function of the fact that there's going to be this big tax cut for wealthy people because of the SALT deal, that all those people who are sort of worried about the CBO score, less worried when it's actually, you know, money that's going to be going to rich
people.
Yeah,
I'm not worried about the House centrists, corporatists. It's Manchin.
It's Manchin, and of course, it will move from the CBO to inflation, although there is, and we'll talk about that in a moment, too. Well, let's just go into it now. I don't care.
Yeah.
What am I?
Rock on.
Who's constraining me from doing this? I got no boss. I can do whatever I want.
Yeah, and
except for right now, I can't find the story that I had so meticulously. I'm talking about the there's religious. As you know, in the Build Back Better bill,
yes,
there is a universal pre-K and daycare. And, of course, I can't find this freaking document. That's fantastic. And there is a provision in this, in the way that there is in every federal program, that we will not pay or subsidize educational institutions that discriminate against people. Mm-hmm. And apparently this is a problem for religious organizations who want to get in on these federal funds. Now, I can tell you what happened in New York in terms of the UPK, and I would imagine it's more or less going to be the same thing on a federal program, which is that a lot of these programs, there were two things that happened in New York City. There were kindergartens added, or I should say, this is universal preschool. Oh, yeah, pre-K. So there were pre-Ks that were added to some existing elementary schools. So we're going to add a program for four-year-olds. And they actually were built from scratch. And then there were other places where they already existed. My son was going to a co-op where we got a pretty good deal because you work part of the time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty Brooklyn-y. But it happens everywhere. You know, you get co-ops all over the place.
Saul working?
No, Saul did not have to work. The parents did.
Sam, pro-child labor.
But once the UPK kicked in, what happened was that they applied to qualify. So, you know, and there was a certain, like, basically dollar amount that they had to, you know, then, and they basically were under that limit. And they were already qualified, essentially, for this program. In other words, you know, the hours or whatever the stipulations were. And it was picked up it became part of the city's UPK program. And I imagine that's what's going to happen here, except for there are some religious organizations that have UPK, preschools at churches. I would imagine at temples, and I would imagine at mosques. Some around the country will have preschool programs. And there apparently are religious organizations whose child care programs, and this is according to the New York Times, whose child care programs are currently exempt from the federal laws that mandate that all providers comply with federal non-discrimination statutes. But even though they're exempt from these laws, just broadly speaking, it means that they are ineligible to receive federal funding. Mm. And so some of the faith groups,
including Catholic Church, the leaders of the Catholic Church, and one of the country's largest Orthodox Jewish groups, they want the bill rewritten, although that's not going to happen, I guess, now that it's been signed.
This is the Build Back Better.
Yeah.
And they want the bill rewritten to say that it's okay for you to discriminate against, let's say, gay people.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess theoretically, I don't know if any of these programs continue to do things like, well, we don't want to mix any races. I mean, this is really the story in many respects, how we got abortion as to be such a primary driver of our politics. Because I think it was Bob Jones University during the Carter years, the Carter's IRS was going to remove its tax exempt status because they were incredibly discriminatory. I think they were either completely segregated or said that they wouldn't allow men and women to date if they weren't the same race.
Yeah.
And the right wing understood, and certainly, you know, all the people around there, like Richard Viguerie, I think it was, understood that that's going to be a really hard thing to motivate people on. Like, we need to have miscegenation and still get tax exempt. Maybe abortion might do it. And that's where we are today. Anyways, this bill would bar federal funds from going to programs that refuse to hire a gay employee or gave preference to applicants of their faith or failed to renovate their facilities to accommodate disabled students. And it's just sort of amazing. So these groups are arguing that their rules would force them to choose between participating in the child care initiative and continuing to teach religious content, convene all boys or all girls programs, or give preferences in hiring to admissions to people of their religion. Well, there is a solution for this. Just keep on keeping on.
Yeah.
And not participate in the federal largesse.
You don't need to get the federal money, or you can accommodate all of these students. That's really kind of it.
Both.
Yeah, both. Exactly.
We want it, but we want them sweet money, please.
Yeah.
That's it.
Now, who would be craven enough to listen to such a plea? According to the New York Times, their efforts, speaking of these faith organizations that have appealed to the worst angels, I guess one could say, of the Biden administration, their efforts appear to have gained some traction in the Senate, where Joe Manchin, the third of West Virginia, a key Democratic swing vote on the social policy bill, has privately told Democrats he wants to ensure that religious programs can fully participate in the child care initiative. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just,
you know what, they can. And there will be a lot of churches that will accommodate this as well. I mean, maybe in area like non-denominational churches or more lefty churches or more lefty synagogues, they're going to accommodate this. But I mean, the ones that don't are going to be the loudest.
And it's not even they don't even have to be lefty synagogues or lefty churches. They just have to be non-fundamentalists who don't believe that whatever Bible they're going by was written by. And in many instances, they're just sort of like, you know, I don't know. They're doing a little bit of improv on those things and extrapolating.
Where are the mosques on this, by the way?
Lines.
I mean, the mosques should do like a kind of some subterfuge here and get involved in this so that maybe you spook Joe Manchin. He backs away from this.
Civil rights groups have pushed back hard at the efforts to remove the non-discrimination provision, saying that any institution that wants to receive federal funds must submit to such laws. Who do they want to shut out? Is it the lesbian mom you want to shut out, said Liz King, director of the Education Equity Program at the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights? Is it the children with autism you want to shut out? Since at least 1964, the law and basic principle has been that federal funds cannot be used to discriminate. No one should have to subsidize their own discrimination. I mean, frankly, I'd like to see us pull their tax-exempt status, too. How's that?
Yeah, let's put that on the table.
But we're not quite there yet. Got a couple of sponsors today on the program. I think we mentioned this on the yesterday, at least. September was broke a record for the number of people who quit their jobs. And it's a function of people basically saying, I don't like this employer, or I've saved up some money, or a lot of people have gone into early retirement. There are apparently over 10 million job openings, but only 7.6 million unemployed job seekers. Employers are having to go above and beyond to entice people to work for them, and that's good. It's about time that you're going to start to see wages go up a little bit. But if you are one of those people who are hiring, you want to try and find good people. Give yourself an opportunity to present as to why they should come work for you. And a great way to do that is ZipRecruiter. Right now, you can try for free at ZipRecruiter.com/majority. ZipRecruiter uses powerful technology to find and match the right candidates up with your job. Then it proactively presents these candidates to you. You can easily review these recommended candidates and invite your top choices to apply for your job. And when you invite someone to apply for your job, start to realize that maybe you're a decent employer. It encourages them to apply faster. ZipRecruiter is the number one rated hiring site in the U.S. based on G2 ratings. I don't know what G2 ratings are, frankly, but I do know that I use ZipRecruiter to find Brendan, and in some way, sort of like Bradley, because I found Bradley through Brendan.
There you go.
Brendan was like, literally, like if you designed in a test tube the perfect candidate, and it was because ZipRecruiter went out and found him. ZipRecruiter's technology is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Now you can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's ZipRecruiter.com/majority, M-A-J-O-R-I-T-Y. ZipRecruiter, it's the smartest way to hire. Check it out. Also, our other sponsor today, longtime listener of the program, fan of the show, a guy who's had years of experience in the solar industry. He saw what was happening in that business, saw some of it could be a little bit predatory, saw that homeowners didn't always know what kind of equipment they needed, didn't know what kind of incentives, tax breaks were available, didn't know how to sort of contract, oversee the whole process. And thus, mysolarnerd.com was born. Wow. And she said, really just say wow?
I'm trying to.
Well, I mean, actually, in some respects, it's a real, it seems like, how is there not more of more solar nerds out there already? As you probably know, it's now possible to retrofit a home with solar panels for no money down. Most homeowners that switch over to solar see significant savings starting in their first year. And this is possible due to the solar investor tax credit, which was extended in the COVID relief bill. My Solar Nerd's mission is simple. It helps you. They help you find the best solar program for your home, and they make the transition as easy and smooth as possible. And how they do it? They analyze your usage. They find the best equipment for your needs. They determine the incentives and financing that you might qualify for. And then they project manage the process between you and the installers. They obtain the permits, et cetera, et cetera. Like I say, these tax credits were extended. There's a 26% tax credit. It drops down to 22% at the end of next year. And some markets that are prone for outages, you may get qualified for off-grid backup solutions. Majority Report listeners are going to get a $200 gift card upon installation of their solar system. Go to mysolarnerd.com, fill out the inquiry form now. Make sure you select the Majority Report listeners so Danny knows we sent you. And check it out. mysolarnerd.com. Sort of the, sort of like a solar, like doula or navigator.
Yeah.
And make sure you put in the you heard from the Majority Report so that when you're done with this, you get a $200 gift card. So there's a bit of a CYA going on. It's interesting just to see who's trying to like sort of like start their career in the post-Trump era without Donald Trump. And now, this moment in particular is really the only opportunity you have if you're trying to, you know, set up. Because we know that the day after the midterms, Donald Trump is going to come out hard. He may come out before then.
Right.
But I think he realized, like when we saw with Youngkin, that he probably understands better to lay low, do some groundwork, whatever. And then on the day after the midterm election, everything's going to be about him again. So enjoy the next year of not Trump insanity.
And it gives certain people the opportunity to reclaim their reputations in the eyes of a press that's quite eager to rehabilitate
exactly.
certain Republicans.
Exactly.
I mean, they did it with Bush. Thought they were going to do it with Trump officials?
Now,
please.
Here's Chris Christie on Fox and Friends. And be clear, understand here what happens with a guy like Chris Christie, right? They're doing a CNN special
mini series on his like post-Trump life.
How the F, like the backstory of that, like if somebody did some investigation, like of all the freaking politicians, all the former governors, who the F cares about Chris Christie?
Well, okay.
Almost died from COVID is the angle they're playing up because he helped Trump prepare for the debates. So that's like a news peg, I guess.
I don't know why that's newsworthy. I mean, it's basically because he already is known to be media savvy. He is an ABC contributor, and I'm sure they have some crossover friends with CNN. And so, like, look, charismatic, tough Jersey guy. I mean, maybe he's getting a show, but the whole point is, like, he's in the area. He's got friends.
I wouldn't be surprised, too, if they produced it and then sold it to CNN. It's maybe one of those jobbies. But he's got to go over to Fox now. He's going to hit all the bases, and he'll do his Fox thing, his CNN thing, and then at one point he'll head over to MSNBC, and I think Scarborough will probably, I don't know, like just literally lick his entire body
kiss
or something
him on the
like
lips.
That.
Yeah.
Here is Chris Christie joining Steve Doocy to promote his new book, Republican Rescue, Saving the Party from Truth Deniers, Conspiracy Theorists.
He's...
So you say saving the party from truth deniers, conspiracy theorists, and then Joe Biden. Who are the truth deniers and the conspiracy theorists?
Well, I go through in the middle of the book things like QAnon and Pizzagate and birtherism. They were all conspiracy theories and things that were just on.
And maybe Fox. You know what's amazing about this is let's just take, for instance, and I haven't read the book. All I know it is the way that that Chris Christie is presenting it. Birtherism. Let's just sit with this for a moment. Who was in this country the primary, the biggest name associated with birtherism?
Well, that would be Donald Trump.
Yes. Now, does anybody remember who Chris Christie essentially, like, literally, like, you know, took his sword and got down on one knee and said, "I am yours, sir."
Get back in the plane. You can go now.
Go,
right?
Go get me my hamburger. I mean, how does this guy
really
have
early.
The gall to talk about birtherism when he literally carried birtherism's luggage?
Yeah. He has plausible deniability, even though it's not true, about something like QAnon, right? Because that came after Trump. But birtherism came before and was promulgated aggressively by the candidate that he staked his political fortunes on and endorsed very early on.
Well, speaking of political fortunes, when I hear Chris Christie say he has a problem with conspiracy theorists, I wonder, is the Fort Lee lane closure thing, is that a conspiracy?
Right.
There was some conspiracizing behind the scenes there, yeah. Inspiring.
All right, let's continue to see Doocy react to this. It's interesting to me, too, that they paired him up with Doocy as opposed to, what's his face? But yeah, kill me. Go ahead.
Conspiracy theorist.
Well, I go through in the middle of the book things like QAnon and Pizzagate and birtherism. They were all conspiracy theories and things that were just untrue that take our party off course, Steve. We don't have to talk about that stuff. We should be talking about Joe Biden and 6% inflation, Joe Biden and the way he disgraced us in Afghanistan, Joe Biden and the way we're seeing our country being embarrassed around the world, and our people at home being taught things in our schools that make us not proud to be Americans. If Republicans talk about that, we're going to win the House and the Senate and then win the White House in 24. We talk about all this other garbage, people are going to think we're not fit to serve.
I mean, he's not wrong about that, but
I frankly, you just look at the gerrymandering, and the Republicans have already picked up 5 seats in the House. So, I don't know that he's correct. Frankly, I mean, they've done, to the extent that they've done well, it's been on those conspiracy theories. the, you know, it's another conspiracy theory that they're teaching critical race theory in the schools.
Yeah.
In fact, there was a story I had today. I didn't go through it. But the next thing that they are going to go after is emotional health in schools. And so it's not just about the idea that it's really been about like teaching Americans not to feel good about themselves in these schools. It really has to do more with they don't like the idea of public schools.
Yeah.
That's what's going on there. We'll talk about that a little bit more later. But let's go into the infrastructure bills just so that people know what's in it. Half of the money in this $1 trillion bill was already earmarked to this stuff.
$1 trillion was over 10 years, right? So it's really more like $100 billion every year, and most of that is going to be from... it's actually $550 billion in new funds, sorry, but half from old money that was sitting around.
$650 billion of the bill's spending would have been allocated for existing transportation and highway programs under previously planned appropriations. In other words, there's $550 billion of new money here. Nevertheless, you have $73 billion for the electricity grid that involves upgrades to the country's power system that will hopefully help the grid carry renewable energy when we decide that we think it's important to have renewable energy. I guess it's nice to have the capacity for
any day now.
$66 billion for rail in this country, which involves a significant investment in Amtrak. That's according to the New York Times. There is also, you know, and are you going to see a lot of improvements? Probably not necessarily. You're just going to see that they're finally going to deal with all this backlog of maintenance that they hadn't been doing. So there won't be any sort of like serious, hopefully, accidents based upon stuff that was sort of punted.
And a lot of this is going towards the Boston to DC corridor, right?
So I mean,
there's
going to
be some expansion,
amount.
But not what I would, you know, see, which was or what I would prefer.
Well, that's the I mean, they're going to put it into where the most traffic is. But the bottom line is that we need high speed rail in this country. We need like you could spend 10 times this in terms of like giving us a genuine, you know, like sort of substitute to car culture. Even electric cars are not going to be a solution to the problems that we have.
And air travel. Like, you want to go to, like, North Carolina from New York City, it's like, I don't know, the time difference, whereas if you could just have a high-speed rail, which is something like, you look at some place like China, and if we're going to get a Cold War going, maybe we should start competing over infrastructure, because they are absolutely cleaning our clocks when it comes to this sort of stuff.
Absolutely. And, frankly, you got ships that are backed up in the off of the you know major ports in California. Well, maybe if you didn't need to have trucks, we lack the truck drivers because the pay is so garbage, and you've got containers backed up in the ports. If we had a decent train system in this country to take that stuff up until the last mile, it'd be a very different situation.
Yeah, it's all good for the Port of LA to say, we're looking at expanding our rail capacity. Like, well, how long is that going to take?
Yep. $65 billion for broadband. This should provide high-speed internet access to hard-to-reach populations, including Native American communities. That's good. $47 billion for climate resiliency. In other words,
Yeah.
We've created the problem, and now we're going to create the profit from creating the problem. This is the pure neoliberal solution here.
And do nothing to actually alleviate the problem in this particular bill.
Well, no, we're just going to mitigate.
We're going to monetize
the rot.
Yeah. Exactly.
We'll punt that to Build Back Better and actually hope the Manchin does the work for us and kills it entirely.
Right. New funding aimed at combating wildfires and preparing coastal regions for more frequent hurricanes and flooding. So...
It's inevitable, and we're not going to do anything about it.
$21 billion for environmental projects. This is $2 billion a year over 10 years. We spend $770 billion a year on our military. That doesn't even include things like the VA. $15 billion for removing lead service lines. We need closer to $45 billion to get rid of all the lead in all our pipes. And, I mean...
Apparently it's $6 billion to replace every lead pipe in the country.
$60 billion. $60 billion, yeah. Exactly.
My own handwriting is terrible. I can't read it.
I'm sorry, we need $45 billion more.
Yeah.
And, but we got to start. Some folks just get a little more lead than others.
And that's some people that won't be poisoned with lead.
Yep. $7.5 billion for electric vehicles, which will add to charging stations, nationwide. And $2 billion for, expanding transportation projects in rural areas, God knows what that means.
And a lot of the discretion on, say, highway projects, New York Times wrote up a piece about this as well, falls pretty much on the states to decide how they're going to expand certain highways in certain areas. And likely, you know, you're going to see in red states and in blue states too, let's not let them off the hook, probably some more racist infrastructure or dividing lines, because there's going to be some of that money has transportation oversight on the federal level, but the majority of it does not.
And the point is, you know, I mean, it's all well and good to fix some potholes and some roads and whatnot, but the bottom line is we need more public transport. You know, we need to have light rail. We need to have more buses, electric buses. Some of these places will do that. Other places will just, you know, build out their roads.
Build another lane of highways.
So that's where we are, this glorified highway bill. There's some provisions in it that are commendable, but completely insufficient for what the challenges we face going forward. I mean, this is, you look at this stuff as if it's, you know, it's being championed as if it's some great achievement. And it really makes you think, like, this country's got a little bit of a problem. I don't know if people have picked up on that.
Yeah, hopefully they have. I mean, Biden and Kamala Harris at the press conference yesterday, what was she saying? You are equal parts believer and builder.
She said that to him?
Yeah.
Oy.
Yikes.
I'm glad I missed that.
I know, it's tough.
equal parts believer and builder.
Yeah.
I feel like that's something Joe you would say, builder. Like, if you were, like, no, married for 35 years and it's, like, your anniversary.
Yeah, and because you are, we are all better off. And it's just, like, when we get to the point where there's nothing really to talk about for politicians, they just get poetic like that.
Yeah, it's like sweet. It's like a wine mom sign in her kitchen, right? It's right next to, it's wine o'clock. It's your equal parts builder and believer, Judy. You can do it.
Judy?
I don't know. not thinking of, yeah, Judy.
Let's talk about this story. It was reported by the New York Times yesterday. Apparently, in 2019, the military, in March of 2019, there was an attack that took place in Syria against the Islamic State, ostensibly. But it turns out that it was actually against 80 women and children. This is, it took place in a town called Baghouz. There was a U.S. military drone that was circling over that town. It saw only a large crowd of women and children huddled against the riverbank. And then suddenly an American F-15E attack jet dropped a 500-pound bomb on the crowd. Once the smoke cleared, a few people stumbled away in search of cover. Then a jet tracking them dropped one 2,000-pound bomb.
Oh.
Then another, killing most of the survivors. This happened in March of 2019, as reported by the New York Times. The U.S. military's busy Combined Air Operations Center at Al Udeid Air Base in Qatar. Uniformed personnel watching the live drone footage looked on in stunned disbelief. This is according to one officer who was there. Who dropped that? A confused analyst typed on a secure chat system. Another responded, "We just dropped on 50 women and children." An initial battle damage assessment quickly found that the number of dead was actually about 70. The strike was one of the largest civilian casualty incidents of the war against the Islamic State, but it has never been publicly acknowledged by the U.S. military. Let me just say what's problematic with that sentence. It really should be, the strike was one of the largest civilian casualty incidents that we know of in this war. Just so happened, you've got whistleblowers in this instance. And 2 years later, 2.5 years later, the New York Times, through reporting, is able to report on it. They go on. It has never been publicly acknowledged by the U.S. military. The details reported here for the first time show that the death toll was almost immediately apparent to military officials. A legal officer flagged the strike as a possible war crime that required an investigation, but at nearly every step, the military made moves that concealed the catastrophic strike.
So, I mean,
lawless.
The coalition forces, seemingly at the United States' direction, also bulldozed the site in order to cover up the evidence. So this isn't slipping through the cracks if there's anybody left watching this who doesn't believe fully that, you know, this is what the United States military does. No, there was a really concerted effort to cover it up with destroying evidence and bulldozing the blast site.
In fact, leadership just seemed so set on burying this, no one wanted anything to do with it, said Gene Tate, an evaluator who worked on the case for the Inspector General's office and agreed to discuss aspects that were not classified. Tate is a former Navy officer who had worked for years as a civilian analyst with the Defense Intelligence Agency before moving to the Inspector General's office. He criticized the lack of action and was awarded a... No, I'm sorry. He was eventually forced out of his job.
Got it.
The Times found that the bombing had been called in by a classified American Special Ops Unit, Task Force 9, which was in charge of ground operations in Syria. I mean... Who the F knows? Like, first off, like, how is it? I mean, I guess we could check back in on this in a couple of months. See if anybody in Congress is going to have any type of investigation. But how is it that there are not people who are being court-martialed for this? In the minutes after the strike, an alarmed Air Force intelligence officer in the operations center called over an Air Force lawyer in charge of determining the legality of strikes. The lawyer ordered the F-15 squadron and the drone crew to preserve all video and other evidence, according to documents obtained by the Times. He went upstairs and reported the strike to his chain of command, saying it was a possible violation of the law of armed conflict, a war crime. And regulations required thorough independent investigation. That never happened. Apparently this week, after the Times sent its findings to the U.S. Central Command, so this week, 2.5 years later, the command acknowledged the strikes for the first time, saying 80 people were killed, but the airstrikes were justified.
Well, because it only matters what your intent is, right? For every other crime in the world, and if the United States is choosing to retaliate against a nation or offensively invade them, the results are what, you know, I mean, like, it doesn't, their intent doesn't matter. But if the United States didn't intend to kill civilians, oh, you know, wash your hands of it.
I mean, do we know that
we
didn't
even
intend?
Know that, right?
I mean, you had the eyes, essentially, of the military, the drone there, clearly understood that these people were non-combatants, clearly understood that they were women and children. I mean, for all we know, some guy in Task Force 9, you know, maybe they had committed crimes against these people. Maybe they had some other type of relationship with these people. And they just wanted to take them out.
Yeah.
Maybe they thought like, oh, these are the wives of people that we know are fighters or might be, and we're going to kill them as retaliation. I mean, we don't know what the intent was.
We don't know because they're basically vaguely saying, I mean, they initially said that they killed, I think, what, four?
It said the bombs killed 16 fighters and four civilians.
Four civilians, right.
As for the other 60 people killed, it was not clear that they were civilians, according to this report. In part because women and children in the Islamic State sometimes took up arms.
So this was a part of the Trump administration's all-out blitz against ISIS. Not to say that these cover-ups and civilian deaths aren't entirely bipartisan, but just to contextualize it, I mean, he was trying to run on a scorched-earth campaign against ISIS and bragged about defeating them. This is naturally what happens in those efforts.
And I don't know what you can make from this, but the Air Force lawyer is the one who went up and said, you know, we could have a war crime here. Believed he had witnessed this guy's named Dean W. Corsack. He believed he had witnessed a possible war crime and repeatedly pressed his leadership into Air Force criminal investigators to act. When they did not, he alerted the Defense Department's independent inspector general 2 years after the strike, seeing no evidence that the IG was taking any action. Colonel Corsack emailed the Senate Armed Services Committee. Now, I don't know. I don't have any inkling, and maybe it's delusional to think that it made a difference to him who was in charge of that committee. Maybe it's just coincidence that he waited until the committee was led by Democrats to decide he'd had enough and wanted a different administration. As far as I can tell, that committee's not hadn't done anything, although I don't know how the Times got this information. Colonel Corsack emailed the Senate Armed Services Committee telling its staff that he had top secret material to discuss and adding, I'm putting myself at great risk of military retaliation for sending this. Senior U.S. military officials intentionally and systemically circumvented the deliberate strike process, he wrote in the email, which was obtained by the Times. Much of the material was classified. He would need to be discussed through secure communications, he said. He wrote that a unit had intentionally entered false strike log entries, clearly seeking to cover up the incident. Calling the classified death toll shockingly high, he said the military did not follow its own requirements to report and investigate the strike. He apparently did not respond to requests for comment from this story. I mean, look, I can tell you, like, you know, reading through this, you get three types of information when you're a reporter. You get off-the-record background, you get on-the-record background but anonymous, and then you get on the record and where you can use their name. I mean, this story does not exist except for leaks that are coming from the Senate Armed Services Committee. And it's unclear whether that's because there are politicians who feel like we can't do anything with this, but have authorized their staff to leak it to the press to build some type of blowback. Or we may see, I would imagine, you're going to see some senator today or the next day, maybe already, saying, I'm disturbed about what I've written, seen in this article. We need to hold hearings. This is the way, they do this. But yeah. Horrible.
I mean, and again, this is, if we're only getting this information because it was provided to the Armed Services Committee and somebody's trying to spur something, there are hundreds, I would imagine, or countless strikes and civilian death undercounts in these forever wars that we don't know about. And, like, let alone the stuff that just doesn't get reported, say, with our troop presence in Somalia or in other parts of Africa, which there's a huge black hole in reporting on what we even do there. I mean, and let alone, like, the clandestine national security agency efforts or whatever the case may be, what the CIA is doing, we'll never know the true death toll. But
yeah, these are lawless cowboys that kill people with, really expensive equipment around the world and get away with it.
Get away with it. And also have the sort of the added benefit from their perspective of creating more enemies, which gives them more work. Total self-licking ice cream cone. Mm-hmm. Haven't had the opportunity to say that in a while.
Oh, they hate us because of our freedom, so.
Maybe we'll get to this story about the CDC interference. I mean, people know, broadly speaking, that Trump interfered in the CDC, but like, there needs to be more aggressive. I mean, this is all coming out of a House congressional committee. They've released emails and documents that show how the Trump administration quashed their own CDC in trying to cover up. I mean, I don't know how you think you cover up a pandemic, but they were like, let's not have any war. I don't even know what the mentality. These people are lunatics. And
I know the mentality. The pandemic is only important based on how it reflects upon us. That's why they change. I mean, some of the reporting that came out, the leaked emails that came out of this, like, they changed testing requirements initially at the objection of, I think, Deborah Birx and other scientists on there saying, don't test asymptomatic people because they didn't want high testing numbers.
Yes. And I guess, I mean, I was about to say, but I mean, that could lead to a pandemic where you have almost 750,000 people or more than 750,000 people die. And how could they possibly escape any type of responsibility for that? And then I just realized, like, oh God, it's Tuesday and it's November 16th and I'm living in,
and it's the Republicans and they'll always find a way to blame somebody else. Yeah.
On some level it worked. Like the idea that you'd have a single sort of, person who, wouldn't hold Trump responsible. And the idea that you still have people who are like, so much of the anti-vax stuff. So much of the problems that we have with public health policy now are a function of what was clearly the CDC trying to do one thing and then having to sort of like twist themselves in pretzels because they were, getting quashed by the Trump administration. And so therefore, that's why you've got all these different like testing directives. It's why you don't have a quality testing regime. I mean, it's all these things. I mean, and it is amazing.
And then you could just turn around and blame the CDC and blame Fauci and blame the scientists. Again, not saying anybody's, fully blameless in this, but that's like the easy way the Republicans can squirm out of this.
Right. But their criticism of them is that they took it somehow too seriously.
Yeah.
Right. And which obscures the reality, which is that they were trying to like manage the image of the pandemic the entire time.
But the obscuring is, yeah, I mean, that's all you need to do, though. That first initial step is easy enough for that.
And we should say, that how these hearings are not, the Democrats are somehow failing to make this the show trials that it should be. That's my feeling about it. I mean, I suppose you could say like there's no media to cover it, but I'm sorry. I mean, I should be getting emails from somebody somewhere about this on a regular basis, right? Like, you know, we should be fed guests on a daily basis. We wouldn't take them, but I'm saying, like, we should be.
Yeah, we should be going after the American government's response the same way we would be after negligent companies where its CEOs made some kind of call.
Yeah, it's just like the Democrats just don't do politics that well.
Or in the same way that the Republicans were trying to go after China.
Or Benghazi.
Benghazi. But just specifically to the related to the pandemic, they were trying to say, oh, it's a Chinese plot. And there's a significant portion of the country that believes that. And they were able to deflect enough blame.
Yep.
But Democrats can never focus blame.
We got to take a break and head into the fun half. Folks, it's just a reminder for you. Majority Live or MajorityReportLive.com. Either one. Get your tickets. We need to book a guest on Friday. We'll talk about that afterwards. But we're going to slowly start to trickle out who's going to be at the show. But I can tell you this right now. I'll tell you this right now. Emma Vigilant's going to be there.
Yeah.
Matt Leck. Bradley Alsop. Who else?
Boston Celtics point guard Dennis Johnson.
That would be awesome, actually. You know, I mean, I think Larry Bird and Bill Walton have pretty good politics.
Hmm.
I know Bill Walton.
There is a picture of Larry Bird.
I've seen that picture. Yeah, Eugene Debs' house.
Yeah. So that's where I'm going off of it.
It's amazing when you like Larry Bird doesn't look that big.
Oh yeah, that's a big boy.
And
Bring Kareem on just to give all the Celtics fans nightmares or flashbacks.
If we had Kareem on, my dad would become a fan of the show, I think.
Really?
He's a big Kareem guy growing up.
I mean, talk about good politics.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, maybe when we go to L.A. I'm not promising.
Whoa.
Probably won't.
Spot.
We probably won't be flying him into Boston.
We should just like promote it as if it's agreed upon, see if we can pressure him into doing it.
That's right. If enough people buy tickets right now, maybe Kareem comes. It's up to you.
Does he get a cut?
Would he get a cut?
No.
Sure. I'd give him a cut. I'd offer it. Of course. Of course I would. And hope he said, like, no. You guys keep it. All right.
I love the show so much. They'll do it for free.
Majority Report Live. Mr. Jabbar, if you are listening, you are
big
welcome.
Fan of your politics and the hook shot.
That's true. The hook shot, actually, I'm not such a big fan of. I was a huge Celtics fan, so that's not. I'm as excited about that, but the politics I love. If you're out there, though, and you do want to come to the show, you will get the VIP treatment. And if you want to be on the show, anytime.
I wonder what the VIP treatment means.
You can come drink a beer with us in the green room.
Yeah,
you have a beer in the green room, and you name your swag.
Name your sebede.
Yes, exactly. Oh, yeah, that's a great idea. Majority Report Live, folks, January 16th. It is the, what are we calling that? The
Jan 16th?
Yeah,
January
16th. 3 p.m. in Boston. That is MLK weekend, essentially. I've extended it to a whole weekend. So Boston, great place for that on that weekend.
Way better.
Yeah. Don't forget, you can also support the show by becoming a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. And folks, if you're one of those people who can't afford a membership, send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. If you've sent it in the past and we didn't respond, send it again. Just put in the subject line, membership help. And we have a little patience and we will get back to you, I promise. And if you don't hear from us, do it again, because stuff falls through the cracks all the time. We get more emails than I can even begin to explain to you. Send us an email. And if you can't afford the fun app, but you want access to it, do that and we will hook you up. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. We're getting into the holiday season, folks. Great time for some Just Coffee. And frankly, that Sunset Lake CBD is also a great. Sebade.
Sebade.
Is a great gift, too. Matt, what's happening in the Matt Lekian media universe?
Yeah, people go check out the at patreon.com/leftreckoning. The first Left Reckoning Farm Report with Aaron Kowalski from Nebraska. Kowalski talking about land use, the future of farming, how we can capture some carbon using farming and send it into the Gulf of Mexico, all that sort of stuff. So patreon.com/leftreckoning. It was a fun conversation.
Nice.
And don't forget Nomi's show. Do we have Nomi? All right, well, we'll have her on in a second, but don't forget to check out her show, youtube.com/TheNomiKeyShow on YouTube. You can also check it out on Rockfin.
Rockfin. Rockfin sounds like a Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, or just, you know, an author that Sam likes. Right. You pick up the old Arnold Rothkin?
Yeah, exactly. That does sound like a book I would have read like 20 years ago or something. All right, we're going to take a quick, break. Head into the fun half. See you there.
Left is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Rand Paul.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabs.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
Do.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me...
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.